Hey everybody, welcome to the LinuxCast. I'm your host Matt.
And I'm Tyler.
And I'm someone, Steve-O. Sorry, I forgot my own name.
Yeah. His power went out not only to his house, but to his brain. It's okay. Apparently, I'm the only sober one on the podcast, so we're having a good time. It's cocktail hour with the boys. You know, if you guys would have told me, I would have brought something. It would have been great. I'm gonna get myself a mocktail or something. anyways, we're having a whole host of technical difficulties. Tyler's, he looks like 8-bit right now. Seriously, not even 16-bit. He's 8-bit right now. Steve's losing power like in half an hour or something like that. So, you know, this is the LinuxCast. We're gonna push through, and it's gonna be fine. I'm sure about it. Anyways, we're going to talk about some news today. For those of you who are wondering where Josh is, he's no longer part of the 6-month Linux challenge. His GPU died this morning, and he decided to hop. So he is...
That frees you from...
No, it doesn't.
Gentoo.
No, it doesn't. Unfortunately, I still have to get... if I fail, I still lose the bet. The bet was we had to make it 6 months. It didn't mean we had to give up if the other person lost, unfortunately. Oh. But... I'm still doing okay. Anyways, so that Josh tried to install Arch for reasons unknown. We all know that Arch does not like that boy at all. So that's the reason why he's not here. He's probably installing Gentoo as we speak, I'm guessing. I told him he should try Redcore, which would make it absolutely hilarious. anyways, this is the LinuxCast. We talk about Linuxy things, and we're going to dive right in. So I got to find where all this stuff is. So... Who wants to go first? Steve, you want to go first?
If you want.
Sure. Which one's first for you?
Last ones. Yeah, and first the second time.
Yeah.
Okay. What I've been doing this week? Zero Linux. I just hopped onto the new Calamaris 3.3, finally. It took me a while. But as Tyler saw... it's looking badass.
Yes, it really is. You've done some really good work.
Yeah. Since we had an interview yesterday, he interviewed me, and he had really good questions. And I applaud you for that, my friend. I applaud you.
Thank you.
I even got caught off guard in some of the questions. So good. Because most interviewers they regurgitate the same questions that others get asked, but the release is next week. It's good. It's done. The ISO is done. I'm going to upload it any time. But other than that, that's all I've been doing, and the Steam Deck, of course. But I've been rage quitting a lot of games. But I want to install Zomboid. Because Tyler got me hooked on it. Well, not hooked, but hooked visually. Rude. I want to try playing it. it's a nice game from the looks of it. It's very laid back. No rage quitting there.
Wait, in Project Zomboid?
Well, so from what I saw so far.
You'll probably rage quit at some point, only because like the game makes it very clear, it literally when the game starts, it's like this is how you died. And so like if you go into it assuming that you can survive for months on end, like you'll probably rage quit. But it is one of those games where as long as you go into it knowing that it's a survival game, it's difficult and you're probably gonna die, and that's kind of like how you get better at the game. Then yeah, it is very relaxing. That's one of the reasons why I've put in I've owned it for less than a week, and I've put in over 80 hours into the game.
Yeah, I keep seeing as your status on Discord playing Zomboid.
Yeah.
I tend to prefer relaxing games these days rather than games with challenges, very hard challenges. So that's why I'm playing Asterix most of the time, and as I said today on my podcast, Tron Runner, because Tron Runner is just running and avoiding obstacles. It's no big deal. You die, you repeat, and it's fun.
Yeah.
Because every time you repeat, it's random. It randomizes the obstacle and the enemy. But other than that, I haven't been doing much because of the power, as you can as you saw.
Yeah.
This is why I'm trying to raise more money so I can afford the generator to keep the power on longer, because now they're fighting us. They want dollars instead of Lebanese pounds. If we pay in Lebanese pounds, local currency, they tell us, oh, okay, we're going to give you only 4 hours or 6 hours of power during the entire day. Once you start paying us like we want you to in USD, we'll give you power 24/7. So, but when we pay them in USD, they increase the value, whatever they to whatever value they want to the dollar.
You need to hop in the car and hop across the border or something, man. You need to find yourself.
I'm going to my sister's wedding. I'm gonna stay there for 10 days. It's gonna be refreshing.
And it seems like
gonna reset.
Sis, I'm not leaving.
You got a couch or something. The internet's too good here. I'm not going nowhere.
She's fighting me to find remote jobs and stay there.
Well, should definitely figure that out. All right. Anyways, Tyler, what have you been up to this week?
Well,
this is me great. I'm just gonna put it this out.
Yeah, I know. So I know Matt wants me to talk about this. So before I go into like the really interesting part that Matt's gonna enjoy, I will go ahead and say, obviously, I tried out Zero G before doing the interview with Steve, and it was actually really good. I did encounter some things that like needed to be fixed, but Steve fixed them like in no time. Like that's one of the great things if you ever want to try out Zero G and you have a problem, Steve will be there to help you. And like, if it's a problem that he needs to fix himself, most likely in like less than 2 hours, it'll be addressed and fully fixed. So it's nice. But, after trying it out and everything, I came across a forum that, and I had never really tried using, Windows 10. And because I know a lot of people like use Windows 10 and will not upgrade to Windows 11 because they've removed all of the telemetry bullshit on Windows 10 and enjoy it that way. And so I wanted to try out how broken or like what will break when you do remove all the telemetry stuff. And I can firmly say that if you remove not necessarily every single bit of the Microsoft telemetry, but if you remove an overwhelming majority of it, stuff starts to break pretty quickly, and
a domino effect.
Yes, I cannot believe that so many people on a forum were talking about how great Windows 10 was when you removed all of the telemetry. One of the wildest things that I've had happen is Windows is really good, so is KDE, but normally with a lot of desktop environments and stuff, they struggle with vertical ultrawide monitors, which is what I love, and I have over here next to my main monitor. I love it for like chat when you're streaming and stuff. And there's a lot of text stuff that makes sense on this big, tall monitor. And Windows is really good about like, you know, when you drag a window to the top half section on the side, like it's going to split it in half or do quarters. Like it's normally really good about that. With Windows 10, if you remove a majority of the telemetry for some unexplicable reason that I cannot explain, it just stops working. So all I can do is maximize a window. But the really, really, really weird part is it now when I try to maximize a window on my ultrawide, there's always like a little sliver of the screen that's just not being used at all, and like I can't get a window to automatically maximize and take up that space, so I have to like manually click and drag it over. And that's just a good example of stuff that breaks that has no rhyme or reason for why it
should
break.
This is what people don't understand. Like there's mini Windows 11, there's Revy 11, there's a million different mini versions of Windows 11 with all the telemetry and all unnecessary stuff removed, but when you start using it and installing your stuff and making it your daily driver, the domino effect
starts. Yep.
And
it's just been one of those things where like I'm very happy to say that I'll be moving back to Linux most likely before the day's over. although I'm not sure exactly where I'm going to go. I told Matt before
not
we started.
Zero?
Well,
not zero?
Well, I actually told Matt before you actually, I don't think you were even in the call, but I told Matt that right now the three distros I'm looking at are 0G, Vanilla Arch, or Debian. And Debian, I can almost say with certainty, will not be the one I go with. Just because of, you know, like, I do want stability, but Debian stability comes at a major fucking cost. Like, if you want a modern package, like, you're pretty much dicked. Like, you're not getting it. And I don't know if I'm going to go with 0G. I think I'm going to install 0G, 0G, like, just to try it out, play with the GNOME edition. Yeah. But I'm not sure if I'm going to stick with it. So if I don't end up sticking with 0G, I'm probably going to go to Vanilla Arch. And then I'm probably going to have eventually, and I'm not doing this to just placate Steve, just so anyone's watching and thinks this, I'll most likely go back to 0 Linux once you've gotten all of the Calamaris updated stuff and all of that gets
next
released.
Week. Yeah, next week.
I'll probably go there after Vanilla Arch and stick there for quite a while, because I really do like what you've done with the system. It's very nice.
This is something Matt is going to like. They released 4 updates for K-Screen in the past few days.
Oh, it's good. But no, my problem with that is that, yeah, they'll fix a lot of bugs, but they'll have introduced like 30 or 40 more.
Yeah.
K-Screen is just not...
it's one of the issues, but it's not the only one.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Like, if you have multi-monitor, just turn that service off. It will save you so much trouble.
It's off by default and 0 Linux.
Yeah, it's just turn it off. It'll be good. All right, so real quickly, what I've done, been doing this week, I have two things to talk about. First, very quickly, I've turned the Steam Deck on exactly one time in the last 7 days. So
I'm not surprised at all.
Turns out, didn't actually help my gaming habits at all. All right, so...
Matt, you are my brother from another mother.
Like, I just... It sits in its case, and every time I turn it on, it has like 12 or 14 updates for every game that I have installed on it, and they're all, like, astonishingly huge in terms of size, which is just... Come on,
with
man.
The exception of Dead Zone.
Yeah, that's only like 1 gigabyte, but I have like I have Apex Legends on there, which I've never played.
Oh,
by the way, like,
good God, get that shit off
like,
of there.
Well, it was free. I was looking for free to play games, and that's one of them. So I was like, I downloaded it. I haven't played it yet. The NBA 2K one always takes up a lot of. Anyways, I always have to accept that it sits because you can't. It will not update those games when the screen is turned off when it's in sleep mode.
No, when it's in sleep mode, Wi-Fi will not.
Yeah, you have to leave. You have to leave it on. Eventually, the screen does turn off, and it like will, you know, keep updating.
Stop everything.
But the eventually the network gets shut off. It's just the dumbest thing ever. Which means you have to let it sit there and just eat power while it's downloading 100 gigabytes worth of stuff. It's
In the Steam Deck's defense, though, like, if the screen is off and it's on, and you, because I do that all the time, I plug it up and I just, like, leave it, because especially if you've got a large library of games on that Steam Deck, like, obviously there's going to be updates that need to be done. The one thing that I will say in its defense is if that screen is off and you check the power draw on it, it's normally between 1 and 2 watts. Like, it's nothing. Like, it's less than a light bulb. It's good.
It's been sitting on my couch here next to my bed. For the past 3 days, I haven't touched it in the past 3 days, and it only lost like 5%.
Yeah, that's fine. I want an option. Linux. Give me an option to say, hey, do updates at a certain time at night. I will deal with the fact that the battery is going to be dead the next time I want to go play. You know, it's fine. Or just let me turn that on for one, you know, say, hey, schedule the updates for tonight. I will know in advance to have it charged up, and then I can turn this option off until the next time I need to schedule updates. I don't want to have to come back to every time. It's just dumb. Anyways, that's not the only thing I want to talk about. I don't want to get into the Steam Deck thing. The other thing is that I found a Gen 2 install script that looked really promising, so I used it on my laptop. And it turns out that there's a really good reason why you should never use a Gentoo install script. Gentoo is way too complicated for an install script. They did a really good job on this one, by the way. It was really well put together. They have a whole incurses menu. It creates like a configuration file that it goes that the install script then will take your options from. And they even have integrated ButterFS RAID support and all this stuff. It's very well done. If it worked, but I think I'm going to try it one more time because the first time it would not update or synchronize the times for whatever reason. So I switched to another live environment to try again and it finally got past that part. And I did that third time, get it to install Gentoo, and I had supposedly it's installed Gentoo, but I could not get it to boot. It wouldn't even load Grub. So there was definitely it's always Grub, by the way. Like anytime you mess up a Gentoo install or an Arch install or something like that, 95% of the time where you messed up was Grub. Like
or doing a Linux kernel, like manual Linux kernel. Those two right there. Well, actually, you're right, because half the times when you do your own manual kernel, the problem is not the manual kernel, but the Grub compatibility.
Yeah, plus, most of the time, I mean, I don't think I've ever compiled when I did Gentoo, the times you guys helped me, and I with Redcore now, and with the Gentoo install script, all of them use the kernel binary. All of them. Yeah. So, every single time I've ever had a problem with Arch or Gentoo, it's almost always been Grub. Grub is fantastic, but man, is it not? not that fantastic because it's just gonna mess you up. All right, anyways, we do have to jump into the news because we're running out of time. So, Steve, your first news item of the week.
All right, it's the KDE console now works on Windows. Not surprising. And more Plasma Wayland fixes and all these. More updates for Plasma, but one of the ones that caught my eye was the timeout of inactivity before sleeping is now 15 minutes by default and will generate the correct power profile for convertible laptop.
What was it before? Was it 5 minutes before?
Something like that. Yeah.
I believe it was. It was really short.
Yeah, and the other one that caught my eye, I don't know if it's interesting to you, but they improved the SCDM login screen, now works with touchscreen in the Plasma Wayland session.
Mm.
And fixing the way application could crash under Plasma Wayland session when the display goes to sleep. A lot of people complain about that.
Okay, so can I... Guys, I want to like KDE so much. Like, I desperately want this thing to be so good because I love customization. I want to customize everything. But when I see a headline like the top thing in this thing, like one of the top things is console now works on Windows.
Yeah.
Could we? I mean, maybe here's an idea: try to make your software less buggy before we make it work on Windows, where no one's going to use it.
And why are they so proud that everything works on Windows? We're trying to move away from Windows, not back to Windows.
There are some applications that KDE is involved with that make sense on Windows, like Krita. Krita makes sense on Windows, right? Because it's a cross-platform thing. You want it to work, whatever. It gives people an alternative to Photoshop.
And Kden Live.
Kden Live. Another perfect example. Console, probably not so much, right? So
let's be honest. They're really as someone who is sitting on Windows at this exact time, not happily, like I'll say that, but as someone who is sitting on Windows at this very moment, I could not come up with any reason at all that I would want to run console on here, other than I'm a KDE developer, and for whatever reason, I'm on Windows.
Yeah, like, this has to be for them. But and I know this is a Phoronix article, so they didn't do this, but I'm assuming that they put these in the article in the order that Nate put them on the blog. That's like number two on the list. Like this, and another thing to the SDDM point you talked about, Steve. Great that it works with touch screens, and I'm that's a big feature that I'm sure that needed to be happened. But SDDM is one of the buggiest pieces of KDE software that exists. Maybe
that's making... why a lot of people have been pushing me to switch to LightDM by default, because every time people on hybrid graphics cannot log in, they get a black screen. I tell them just type to LightDM and switch to LightDM. So why not include it by default instead of SDDM? Because it's not customizable.
Well, LightDM is customizable, if we're being completely honest. I'll stop you there. It is completely customizable. You can theme the shit out of it. You really can't.
But you have to use LightDM WebKit something.
Yes. That's the main problem. It's like it is customizable, but nowhere near the level of SDM or SDDM, or really for that matter, most other login managers.
Well, GDM's not customizable at all.
Okay. Well, that doesn't. I don't really count that one.
Wait, because I have a tool on 0G that ships on 0G called GDM settings.
Yes, but you're hacking it. That's the difference.
It just changes, because just by default, the way they meant it to be work is just the wallpaper that you can change, right?
Yeah.
On GDM.
Everything else that you can do through GDM is essentially the same way that you're doing it in GNOME. Like, you're applying hacks.
It's GNOME.
Like, it's not really
things. It's basically GNOME tweaks, right, for the display manager. And that's, you know, that's fine. I mean, that's just the way GNOME works. And the GNOME stuff is never going to be as customizable as KDE stuff. Yeah. Expecting it to be as customizable as none of that was the point. The point was the SDDM is horribly buggy. Maybe they should
It doesn't work with the hybrid graphics. That's as soon as you switch to that, you're done. Yeah. You have to switch.
But what we're talking about is the difficult stuff to address. And like that's really in KDE and most KDE projects, like, and this is not a diss towards them at all, because most people prefer this and like this about KDE, is they are constantly adding new features or fixing the critical errors with stuff. If it's not a necessarily critical error, but it's something that needs to be addressed,
yeah, but
it takes longer.
But having it work on hybrid graphics, I think that would be part of the critical things.
The problem is not everybody has hybrid graphics, so
I'm sure that it's hard to test because, you know, they'd have to have the hardware to test it. But I'm sure that someone in their community with some developer knowledge could help, would volunteer to help them. Yeah. But that individual,
it's kind of weird. It's kind of weird to address. They need to work more on SDDM. It's the thing that gets the least amount of love.
Yeah. It's overlooked. If we're being honest, yeah. It really is. It's just overlooked, and I understand why. Like, there's a lot with the desktop. There's a lot of features that have recently been added, and those require bug fixes and stuff, and there's constantly stability stuff with the actual main desktop being worked on. And really, in all honesty, as a developer, I do understand it being hard to find, as a development team, I understand it being hard to find developers wanting to work on SDDM, just because even if you do something really cool there, a very, very small portion of people will actually, I guess the best term would be respect it, or really appreciate it. So I do understand that, but I completely agree with you guys. Like, it absolutely does need to be addressed and worked on more.
And in the article, they allude to the third point release. So there will be a third point release. I thought it was LTS and it wasn't gonna. It's the last KDE.
The problem is they always bring out so many new features. They have to release point releases because they, with every new feature, they have to bring them out. I will say this again, and I've heard Niccolo's argument about why they can't do it. I understand, whatever. I don't agree with it, but he knows way more about KDE than I'm ever going to. But a freeze in features for a year would solve this. The problem is, not only would it go away from their release schedule, you know, whatever, but also, guys, we just have to admit that fixing bugs isn't fun. Adding new features is, right?
Yep.
So, fixing bugs, trying to figure out how to fix bugs, what's actually going on, what's causing the bugs, all this, you know, this triage that you have to do in order to fix stuff, it's not fun. It's time consuming. And it burns developers out like crazy. So
the problem with KDE, it's not actual. There's not a lot of developers, in-house developers. It's mostly community driven.
And community developers are looking to have fun. And like, yeah, that's one of the reasons why KDE's feature set is so wide. It's like there's a lot to play around with a desktop. Like, if we're being honest, like,
well, and they, you know, if there's not a feature there that you want, you just go make it. And KDE is so great about just, hey, you know, hey, integrate this stuff. It's really cool. Plus, the new features that they have garner, you know, attention and stuff, right? So, and whereas bug fixing a bug, I mean, yeah, us nerds are going to pay attention to it. And yeah, you fix the bug. But most people are going to be like, hey, that's what you're supposed to be doing, right? But
The way I do it nowadays, whenever I encounter a bug, I don't report it on their bug reporter because their bug reporter is a nightmare.
Well, it's because it's so full. There's just so much there.
And not only that, it's really hard for a new user to find his way there. And look at me. I'm a distro maintainer, and I cannot find my way.
Yeah, that form is not easy to fill out. You have to have some technical knowledge just to fill that form out.
So what I do is I just go to their Telegram, and I message them there. So,
yeah.
Fun deal.
Which I think in the future when it comes to a lot of, like, not just KDE's bug reporting, but bug reporting in general, it's going to move to more messaging platforms like Discord, Telegram, and stuff because it honestly just makes more sense, especially when the whole goal of bug reporting is to have normal, regular users tell you what they're having issues with. A normal, regular user doesn't want to go to some random-ass form that, like, has a ton of technical bullshit on it.
No, but you're right. But now, since Matt and I have set up a forum style in Discord, where people can create threads, forum threads, basically, to which we, once it's solved, we can just add a tag that's with a check mark, green check mark to say solved, which is great on you, Matt. I didn't even think about that.
It was J-Dog's idea. It was all him. I didn't even know those things existed. They're great.
You must admit that having a forum in Discord is amazing.
Yeah.
It allows us to keep track of every issue.
The only way a bug tracker outside of an actual bug tracker would work, because Telegram would not. Like guys, I understand you want a great way to go interact with the developers is probably like Telegram. But the last thing they want to have to do is start scrolling back through, you know, hundreds and thousands of messages.
That's why I closed my Telegram.
To actually see, oh, here's a bug, whatever. It's just not organized enough. So it has to be a form of some kind. It has to be
Discord.
A bug tracker. And I mean, the problem, we're really spending a lot of freaking time on this, but the thing is that a lot of people don't want to join Discord. Like if you're in the open source community, you don't necessarily want to join Discord because it's proprietary and there's a lot of
They don't want to give their number.
Well, yeah, and in order to get a lot of the features of Discord, you do have to have 2FA enabled, which is not something that I know a lot of people who don't want to have 2FA enabled, even if it is safer for them, but they don't want to have to deal with that mess because let's just face it, a lot of 2FA applications that people are going to use are from proprietary corporations. Now, for those of you who don't have 2FA enabled but would like it, use something like, you know, KeePass XC that has it built in. Use Bitwarden that has it built in.
Well, and also, especially nowadays, like, if you would like to use platforms that require 2FA and you don't want to have to give out your real phone number or any like private information like that, for one, I think it's like $25 like USD pretty much worldwide to get a fake post office box so you can get a fake address that you can use. Get a burner phone, and like you don't even have to pay for service for it. Just get a prepaid one, and only pay the prepaid when you know you're going to need it.
Google Voice is also an option.
But
I don't know if you guys have seen this, but a lot of places that require you to give them your phone number don't accept Google Voice numbers anymore.
Yes,
they consider it VoIP, and because it's VoIP, they won't accept it. All right, we do.
There's some nice weed eating going on.
There's definitely something going on there. I'm not sure what that is. All right, moving on. So, Tyler, your first one.
Yes, mine is about Ubuntu, and, well, mainly canonical Ubuntu, because this is kind of an enterprise thing. But Ubuntu now officially supports the Microchips Polar Fire SoC FPGA Icicle Kit RISC-V board.
I'm going to stop you right there. Developers of software and hardware alike, if you're going to do something like this, don't name it. Just don't even bother. That's horrible.
Actually, no. I'm going to spend a brief second on this. Please, for the love of God, if you are going to make a device, a piece of software or something, if you can't reasonably speak the name of the device or the term for it, whatever, in a second, you fucked up. Like, I shouldn't have to speak an entire sentence to say your name. Like, just please.
You need a comma or a semicolon in your name. You probably named it something a little bit too long.
Yes.
Like, but, Elon Musk with his children's name.
Yes.
Whatever.
Yes. Like, hyphen something. Like, ridiculous.
That guy took the weed a little bit too far. I'm just putting that out there.
Yes, he did. As a stoner, I can completely agree with that. But anyway, with Canonical, so they've released the support for this RISC-V board, which is actually pretty good because there is... I mean, the name for the device doesn't exactly tell you what it is. It's a little overly descriptive, but... whatever. When it comes to like RISC-V, I really don't think that RISC-V is going to be something where it's a desktop, laptop, or even mobile competitor for the next 10 years. I think it's going to take probably a decade before it really does become competitive in the space. But for everyone who is open source minded, free software minded, this is something that is really good to see that's being worked on. And if you are a developer, then I would highly suggest supporting stuff like these types of hardware advancements, just because if there is no one purchasing them, if there's no one really buying them in the consumer space, they'll never really see a potential value in moving to the consumer space.
It has to be something that the company wants, first of all, right? But also, it has to be – you can't come out with a board right now and have it be less than the Raspberry Pi. You know, it has to compete with the Raspberry Pi. If you go buy a board that costs the same amount and it doesn't do as much, then you're going to have a bad experience and you're going to want to go buy a Raspberry Pi. You know, so
– I really wanted the Kadas Edge 2, but
The thing about this, though, guys, is that this kind of stuff is going to happen because there are big companies behind RISC-V.
Yes.
Like Apple, Microsoft, yeah. Google, they're all supporters of RISC-V. Yes. NVIDIA
Even further than just the companies that want to get invested in RISC-V, RISC-V as a platform is incredible. Like the idea of having open hardware like RISC-V. RISC-V is just in case people don't know this, RISC-V architecture is much more similar to ARM compared to x86. It's not like it's like ARM or x86, but it's much closer towards the ARM side of things. So the way the architecture is set up, it's much more efficient, and the companies that are supporting RISC-V are really pushing forward this idea of not just manufacturers, but also consumers being able to custom build and pick out components for their hardware. And one of the things about support coming to this kind of board and these kind of development boards coming out to the consumer market that makes them very, very good is... I mean, this board, for example, has NVMe slots on it. It's got an SD card slot. It's got two Ethernet ports. It also, just in case you didn't know this, it's got a GPU slot on it. So if you want to throw a GPU in this fucking bad boy, you can.
What GPU is going to support? What GPU supports RISC-V? Any of them?
Well, I don't know that it would necessarily have to support RISC-V. As long as the RISC-V architecture is built to support the GPU,
yeah,
then okay. It should be fine. So really, in all honesty,
I would be interesting to see if somebody actually like plops a 4090 in.
Oh my god! We also do have to keep in mind that the processor, if you look at the board, it's a very small chip. And there's no heat sink on it.
It's going to set itself on fire.
It's not like it's going to do 4K gaming or some crazy shit like that. But this kind of hardware progression is really important for the future of open hardware, which pretty much as it stands now doesn't exist. There is no such thing as open hardware anymore. I mean, sadly enough, even if you think about a ThinkPad and you're like, oh, ThinkPad is completely open source. If you think that, you're fucking lying to yourself. It's not. There's multiple pieces, and especially if you're using a half decent Wi-Fi card, I bet you that bitch is not open source.
Oh, guaranteed.
So one of the things that this article did kind of make me feel happy about is, even though these kinds of boards right now are mainly aimed towards developers and obviously the more enterprise environment, there's nothing excluding, especially price-wise, from the consumer developer market getting in on this. And I think that's probably going to set us up for success. If you're a developer and you have a couple extra $100 to blow on some, you know, RISC-V boards to mess around and play with, I think it would be especially beneficial for the future of open source and Linux and everything else.
Yeah, for the growth.
Yeah, for you to go ahead and get it and start working on this kind of stuff. If a lot of applications, especially now, have unnecessarily good RISC-V support, that's only going to benefit us for the future. Because I do really, really hope that in the future we can move towards, especially in the open source community, having our own kind of separate hardware that is competitive with the normal.
And think about it this way. Think about it this way. Imagine you have a washing machine or a dryer or whatever running on RISC-V. It's more. It would be better for that to happen. So at this point, we know everything that's running on that. It's open. Yeah. Open source.
You can at least check it, because now your fucking toaster might have some proprietary hardware in it that's also got some proprietary software.
You have to call the guy who repairs the toaster and pay the toaster repairman and the washing machine repairman and whatever. With RISC-V, that opens the door for you to be able to do your own self-repairs. And
also just feel comfortable that the... Because, I mean, like a Huawei or whatever is a good example of hardware manufacturers doing something not necessarily proven to be malicious, but very, very possibly being malicious. At the very least, in the future, if we're able to get more RISC-V integrated into things, it's going to be much more comfortable to rely on the community around the hardware to know whether or not if it's doing
community support.
Yeah, and
community support, like the Raspberry Pi, has a huge community behind it. That's why it's loved by so many people. It's an amazing thing to start using things like that. I would hope so.
Biggest issue, guys, is going to be the traditional Linux open source problem. And when you create something that's open, everyone's going to create their own version of it, and doesn't mean that those things are necessarily going to be interoperable. Right. Yeah, one of the reasons why Raspberry Pi has a huge following is because when you want to develop for the Raspberry Pi, you can develop for the Raspberry Pi, and it will work across the vast majority of their hardware. Right.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily going to be the truth about RISC-V, because you know Microsoft can make their own RISC-V thing, and Apple and System 76, or whatever. Every company is going to make their own thing. And is everything going to be interoperable? If somebody makes an application that runs on RISC-V, will it run on every RISC-V?
Well, I think the big thing it will be when it comes to RISC-V itself. It is open in nature, so I feel like it's probably going to be one of those things where I mean, Apple or whatever big companies are going to have their own versions with some hardware that they've specially made added in there. But I think in the vast majority of cases,
they're going to close source it.
Yeah, of course they are. But at the same time, I think it's going to be one of those things where if RISC-V development is being done at an enterprise level widely, the odds that that trickles down and improves the consumer market for open platforms is much better. Like, if you think about it like this, one of the big things hardware-wise that, like, System 76 and all of these different open-source manufacturers struggle with is they can't get deals with bigger manufacturers. And in all odds, if there's 15 different manufacturers for RISC-V and, like, you know, the variance in quality is, you know, very little between them all, the odds that those open source manufacturers can strike a deal, you know, with one of the other manufacturers or, you know, for hard specific component hardware pieces, it's going to be higher. I'm not saying it's guaranteed.
There isn't a scenario here where one manufacturer, one maker of RISC-V becomes the most popular, and that's the one everything uses. But the thing that you guys, we have to take into account here is that one of the reasons why computers have become such a big thing in the world, personal and enterprise and all this stuff, is because of standards, right? X86 is a standard. It may not be an open standard, but it is a standard that companies use, and it means that if I want to run an application, it doesn't matter if I have an Intel CPU or an AMD CPU. I can run that application. It should work, right? The thing that Linux and open source software hates the most is standards. Case in point, systemd. Systemd is a standard, right? Standard. But you have those guys out there that hate systemd. Now, it's a small portion of, you know, the community, right? But they're there, right? And, you know, that's obviously a huge, you know, example, but there's, you name it, there's an example for this. You know, you want a different grub or different boot menu than Grub, it exists, right? If you want a different display manager, you can choose between 10 different display managers. We don't have standards, and that's just the nature of open source, because if you don't like something, you can go create something yourself. And it's going to be the same thing with this. And that's what worries me most about RISC-V, is that if someone doesn't like the way this particular CPU works, they could go make their own CPU, which is a fantastic thing to do. But the interoperability there then ceases to exist unless they come up with some kind of way to make that work. I'm not a technical guy at all, so maybe there's ways to get around that, but we do have to move on to the next one. So my first one is that Vanilla OS has ditched Ubuntu and moved to Debian. They're moving to Debian Sid, which is, like, I thought that they'd move to Debian Stable, but no, they're moving to Debian Sid. They bring up multiple reasons. The biggest one, they said that they want to be closer to the stream of from GNOME. So they want to be closer to the development of GNOME. For whatever reason, they think Debian is going to be that. And apparently they were using Ubuntu's version of GNOME, because Ubuntu makes a whole bunch of changes. So they want to be as close to vanilla GNOME as possible. My question then is why they didn't try to base it on Fedora, but, you know, probably because Silverblue already exists, but whatever. The second reason that they gave was snaps. I mean, are we surprised at whatsoever that snaps? And then the third reason that they gave was they want to be in charge of its own release cadence, which is more possible because Debian literally never changes. I mean, they're going to be completely in control because they're going to be able to control, you know, if they want to include some of the stuff from Backports, they can do that. If they want to do whatever they want to do in order to keep the kernel where it needs to be or whatever, they can do that.
All valid points. All valid.
Yeah, I think some people are going to see this as a kick to in the pants to Ubuntu, but I don't think Canonical gives a rat's ass about this.
Oh, they don't.
They don't.
Right?
They don't.
I mean, I saw some people in the comments saying, like, oh, you know, this is really bad for Ubuntu. Like, but first of all, vanilla. If you guys have tried a vanilla OS, it's still very, very early in development. It has some. I mean, there's a reason why they can move from Ubuntu to Debian and not really worry about it so much, because they're still basically in alpha mode. you know.
And it's been kickstarted by a single guy, the creator of Bottle.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, so they're so fluid and be able to move this because they're still very, very early in the development. But also, Canonical doesn't care who bases stuff off from their thing. There's a, the Mint developers have had so many really horrible things to say about Ubuntu over the years. Canonical still doesn't give a rat's ass, right? they just don't care.
Exactly. It's a corporation. Ubuntu is a corporation. They don't. Those are small fish. They don't care about them.
I'm still surprised that they chose Cid, which is more of a rolling release style.
It's good they chose Cid. I saw it as a great move. When I read the article, I was like, great job on moving to Cid. Because imagine Vanilla OS moves to Arch, for example. Oh, come on.
Yeah, another Arch distro. Like, it is one of those things where I find it very interesting that they chose Cid. Because for one, most people wouldn't assume that's what you move to. So, like, that's good. Because, again, like Matt said, most people, I would assume, are like me in assuming, well, me and Matt, we both assume that they would move towards something like stable, which makes more sense. Like,
well, for a immutable distro, it seems to make more sense. But also, exactly. Cid gives them access to more recent packages. It's not necessarily – I don't think that it's the rolling release nature of the distro that they particularly care about. More that it gives them access to newer packaging, which is more important than using the crusty old shit that Debian Stable will give you. Because Debian Stable is still, correct me if I'm wrong, is on 5.15 for its kernel.
Yes.
Which is just, I mean, that's a four-year-old kernel at this point. I mean, I don't know if it's actually 4 years old, but it's really old. We're at like 6.2 now. 6.3 is in development. 6.4.
I don't even know if my hardware is supported by that. Like my graphics card.
Like 5.15... is real. Now, obviously, you can get back ports and stuff on stable. You can get up to 6. And I know you can get up to 6 because that's what Josh was trying to do. He was stuck on 6. He needed to get to 6.2, but it was not in back ports yet, and maybe not. Probably won't be because they're moving to Bookworm pretty soon. So, you know, the problem with stable is that it's so crusty and so far behind, even with back ports. So Cid makes a hell of a lot of sense because it gives them control over the versions of what they have. But it doesn't go as far as going the whole Arch thing.
Right? And they want to be stable, and they want to be more on something that can be stable. So I'm like, all the arguments they presented in the article are all valid. I don't see anything wrong with any of the choices they made. So congrats on the move, because I was wondering why did he begin basing it on Ubuntu? I was like, he should have gone Debian in the beginning, because I don't want to see yet another Arch distro.
Josh brought up a good point. See, Ubuntu uses Debian Cid for like a lot of their stuff too. Like, that's where they pull a lot of their stuff, and it is actually a good thing that they didn't go anywhere else, because like I do get why they would go with Ubuntu out of the start, because if you're trying to make a new distro, you probably want to use something that a lot of people are already familiar with, at least in some way, especially with something like Vanilla OS, because it does do a lot of different things that set it apart. But at the main core of it, you want to have something that people can start using right away and like at least have some familiarity with. The interesting part about it is them moving away from Ubuntu because of snaps, or at least like using that as one of the top three reasons for moving away, which ironically to me, I kind of agree with you, Steve. Like, why would you even like if all of the developers are not enamored with snaps, which like, let's be honest, like there's like 5% of the consumer market out there that's like, yeah, we love snaps. Everyone else is just like, can we not? Like, flat packs work and great. Like,
somebody out there has the Snap t-shirt. I guess it has the Snap D logo on it, or the cap or whatever.
No, but
it's the only one they ever sold.
as a distro maintainer, I didn't include Snap support on Zero Linux by default, but they can add it, of course, later on. Nobody complained about it.
Yeah.
Absolutely zero people complained about no Snap support.
Yeah.
I'm like, tech support.
Well,
tech support.
It's because flat packs are a thing. And
flat packs are just better. I watched DT's video on app images and stuff again. He's such a fanboy. anyways, we have to move on. We still have three things to go, and we only have 15 minutes to do them in. So we got a lightning round. So first, contact information. If you want to find us, then contact us in any way you can do so. There's plenty of ways for you to find out. You can go to the website. TheLinuxCast.org is the website. There you'll find blog posts and previous episodes going all the way back to season one. All that stuff is there. We were talking about Anchor in the pre-show. I'm really hoping I don't have to switch away from Anchor, because having to change all those links will be a pain in the ass. I'm going to have to learn regex in order to do it, because there's no way I'm doing it manually. I'm just putting this out there. Anyways, you can find all of that stuff there at the website. If you want, Tyler has a YouTube channel where he occasionally streams and stuff like that. So he's on youtube.com/zanyog. Steve is also on YouTube and many other places. He's on YouTube at youtube.com/@0linux, zero with an X, not with a Z. All the links and stuff for all the contact information you can find at linuxcast.org/contact. And you guys should be very, very proud of me, because I did this without any of the contact information in front of me. So I did it all from memory. It's fantastic. Email for the Linux Cast is email@thelinuxcast.org. If you're on older episodes, I mistakenly said email at thelinuxcast.com, which is not a thing. Thelinuxcast.com does work. I do own that. It just, you know, redirects, but the email address doesn't exist. And finally, you can support me on Patreon at patreon.com/linuxcast, and you should subscribe to Linuxcast, where I do 4 or 5 videos a week about Linux and stuff. That's youtube.com/linuxcast. If you're watching it on YouTube right now, hit that red subscribe button, because I'm a YouTuber and I'm supposed to say that. It's in the bylaws. Okay, moving on to the next one, or Steve, your last link.
My last link is about Box x86 and Box 64 release for running Linux x86 64 programs on ARM. Why did I choose that? Because I own a Raspberry Pi, and I always struggled with running x86 applications that don't exist for ARM on that thing. That's one of the reasons why it sat there gathering dust. But with this update, I don't think it will be gathering dust anymore, because now it allows us to run normal applications on the Raspberry Pi, on the likes of the Raspberry Pi, and it also brings with it better Gallium 3D9 support. So, yay! Raspberry Pi lives again.
That sounds really cool. And that's obviously one of the biggest things you have to worry about if you get an ARM, like, you know, a Pinebook or something like that. You have to be able to use your applications, and there's not a lot of ones that do it natively.
And now with this update, it also allows me to build packages from the AUR that were supposed to run on x86 or x86-64 architecture to run natively on the Raspberry Pi, which is an ARM device.
Yeah.
Nice.
I'm loving it.
Really cool. All right, Tyler, your next one. Lightning round, guys.
Yeah, we're doing great. So mine is Linux 6.4 is slated to start removing old, unused, and unmaintained PCMCIA drivers. If you don't know what those are, it doesn't matter, because you probably have never seen one. And if you're buying,
or will you?
Yeah, if you're buying one of these, I don't know what the fuck you're doing.
Laptop, for those kids out there, laptops used to have like actual expansion card slots in the next one. And I'm not talking like an SD card, like actual, like you could put, I think they actually made like a GPU that you could put in there.
Yeah, GPUs, disk drives, like everything.
Sound cards were the big one, because you wanted to, if you were an audiophile.
Another
Wi-Fi cards
another
as
big
well.
One.
Yeah.
Another big one that we mentioned on my podcast earlier, because we talked about that subject. Was the credit card swiping machine.
Oh my god, that's right. I totally forgot about that. You could do that. I remember those in the back in the day.
There were a ton of these things, but they weren't popular in terms of like every manufacturer made them. Like you had,
no.
It was like,
but some companies still use them. So dropping this, they would
hold on. Let's be completely honest. Some companies still do use them. However, it would cost about $40 for them to upgrade to something different.
The thing here is that companies that still use them, I guarantee, aren't using the most latest kernel. Those guys are all using an LTS kernel from like 10 years ago. Yes, almost guaranteed. This is not going to affect those companies at all. And at least not for a very long time.
Matt, good news. Government electricity, so we don't have to go as fast.
Awesome. Well, but
hold on a second, guys. I just want to comment on the unpredictability. Like there's just like some Homer Simpson like guy at the power plant. Like, so, I think today we're gonna give them some power. And then if he's not drunk enough the next day, or he forgets or something like that, shut that damn thing off. You don't need it. Like, he's just too busy eating donuts.
It's random. It's random. This is how I live my life in Lebanon. It's random. Like, randomness.
Either that, or there's no guy at all, and somebody just wrote a bash script, and it's like it's slash dev random, and that's how they probably figured it out.
Probably.
Now, before I forget, because one part of this article that I do want to stress is a big kernel developer, Bergman. I don't know if anyone has ever heard of him. I've seen him mentioned quite a few. It's not like I know the guy or have ever heard or spoken to him directly, but he's a pretty big kernel developer, and he made a comment on them removing this on the mailing list. And his comment was, the two important use cases that I see for the drivers / PCM CIA error card bus devices on old laptops, which work with normal PCI device drivers and CF card storages for embedded systems. If we can separate the two by moving native card bus to drivers PCI hot plug, but drop support for 16-bit PCM CIA devices and card bus slots, this will hopefully get a lot easier. If you don't understand anything that I just said, or you read the article yourself and you're like confused, literally what he's talking about is there is some of these old devices that do have a valid use case still, and most likely don't need to be axed completely.
Okay. Can I hit back at this guy just for a minute? Remember, I'm not a Linux developer of any sort, a developer of any sort, really. I'm just getting started with Python, so don't at me. But the Linux kernel guys need a poll system, straw poll or something like that, that they push out and say, hey, we're thinking about removing this thing. How many people actually use it? Because they need to stop supporting code for 4 people. Okay.
Yeah.
Like this guy brings up such a niche use case.
Yes.
Of anything, right? I guarantee that. Okay, maybe there are 10 people in the entire world that have this scenario. That's not justification for keeping it in the kernel. Now, if it was 1,000 people, sure, fine, whatever. I don't know what the cutoff or whatever it should be, but if it's just a very small amount of people, like we had this argument a year ago when they removed floppy disks support from the kernel. Like, guys,
dude,
4 people.
The kernel has to shed some weight.
Well,
it cannot continue becoming so big.
Well, hold on. Exactly. I will play the devil's advocate here.
Get your horns out.
Most likely, if they're supporting code for, let's say, a use case of 4 people globally, most likely one of those 4 people are, you know, a big wig at one of the Linux supporters, like Microsoft, like whoever's donating a shitload towards the Linux kernel's development. If they're one of those people that have that, you know, super odd use case, because like in the back of one of their server rooms, they've got an administrative PC that's using these types of cards and like super old, like legacy code. I totally see. I will defend them in saying we can't ax it because we don't want to piss off someone who's giving
$2 million
dollars.
No. Guys, Hibdad basically said something similar. Like, he said that the thing is that most of these are still usable systems. And I agree with that, but these systems are at least 15 years old. Okay, at least 15 years old. Not a single one of them need to use kernel 6.2. Okay, yep. Vernal version 4 point whatever is still in support for another like 2 years. version 5 is going to be in support, and various versions of version 5 are going to be in support for another 10 years. Continue to use your crusty old systems on those kernels. It's not going away. They're not going to backport this change to version 5. Whatever.
Let's be clear. Sorry to cut you off, Tyler, no, but let's be clear. If you really are rely on drivers or whatever to be in the kernel for the PCMCIA card, and you are one of those very niche people who still use that ancient technology, you should be maintaining whatever works for your device on your own. The kernel, the more the kernel grows, the more it's if they kept everything for every support for every single piece of drivers dating back to the 70s, it's gonna be like 100 gigabytes.
It's literally Windows problem. Windows is notorious for keeping legacy systems. Like there's printers out there that still work on Windows out of the box that were developed in the 1980s. Okay.
Yes. And that have all been destroyed. There was actually a literal example of one of their driver, like their old legacy driver code that was still in Microsoft's code base. None of the printers still existed.
Yeah. No one is saying take all the support from every single kernel that is supported right now. It's just from the future, okay? From a kernel that's still at least 6 months away, let's go ahead and remove this stuff. And because if you're using such old hardware, you're probably not using a newer kernel anyways. And if you are, I mean, are you running Gen 2 testing on one of these things? I mean, what are you doing if that's the case? I want to talk to this person who's running a rolling release on a system like this.
I agree with you guys 110%. The thing, though, is playing the devil's advocate. I will say, look, when it comes to getting like financial support and backing, most of the people that are over the communication between you know the Linux devs and like let's say Microsoft for example or whoever's giving them a shitload of money, I totally see those people not being developers or like really understanding stuff.
But if you have $2 million to support Canonical or the Linux kernel or whatever, surely you can take, I don't know, $150,000 of that to pay a developer to do just this.
You
know
what I mean? No. Again, I'm not playing the devil's advocate. Like
you're not really doing it very well. Okay, I'm just saying.
Well, no, you're I'm not. But at the same time, like, I do understand from the Linux, like, developer's perspective, they would rather just be working on the shit that they need to get done than have to explain to some dumbass rep, like, no, just because we're removing support in the new Linux kernel doesn't mean your system's gonna break. You're fucking fine. Yeah. Like, please continue to give us your $2 million.
That's exactly along the lines of what Matt just said. It's like, if they're using that ancient hardware, they must be on an ancient version of the kernel. They're not gonna be on the latest and greatest rolling kernel. Yeah.
Chances are, if they're reading news about kernel development, they're probably technologically savvy enough to know that the kernels that they're on is not going to be.
I've spoken to enough executive, like high ranking reps at companies to know. Assuming they're smart people is not always a good idea, because some of those people have just failed upwards their entire career. Not saying all of them have, but there's a surprising number.
I'm sure that there are plenty of dumb people in the corporate strings of all the companies. But
just a side note, guess who joined the Steam Deck rank?
Who?
Niccolo.
It wasn't Josh.
Niccolo.
Oh, really?
From the KDE development. He said, I don't know if I should get the Steam Deck, and now he got it. I just got a screenshot from
It's about time. That I mean, the Steam Deck uses KDE. Like, come on.
He's going to work on something for the Steam Deck. Yay!
Great. Excellent. More new features. It's going to be great. speaking of the Steam Deck, let's go ahead and move on to the last one here. This is mine, and I have a feeling we're going to have some conversation about this, because we have two Steam Deck fanboys here and me who doesn't use it. You know, I have one, sits in the box, right? And Steve is waffling, right? So Valve has come out and said that the next Steam Deck, Steam Deck 2, is going to be at least a few years away. Now, for those of you who are playing Valve Bingo, you guys probably all got Valve Bingo right now, because this is so Valve, it's literally tattooed on their forehead. Like the Index now is 6 years old, or something like that. It's been around for ages. And where's the sequel? It's not here. The Steam controller has been around for at least 4 years, probably longer. No sequel.
You own a Steam Deck. If they came out with a Steam Deck 2, like 6 months from now, wouldn't you be upset?
I'm not saying they have to do one every year, dude. I understand.
I know. I'm just saying, like, if they announced that they were going to do one here real soon, like in 6 months to a year, you'd be like, fuck, man, come on. I just got it.
That's the way technology works. Sometimes you buy a laptop and then the new one comes out the next week and you're like, this sucks. But it happens, and it has happened to everyone. But, I mean, they did not. Look, guys, you can't. This is my opinion on this whole thing. When you basically have reinvented a market sector, because gaming handhelds were controlled by the Switch for the last 3 or 4 or 5 years or whatever. There has been no other gaming handheld out there that has been worth its weight in money other than the Switch for a very long time. Prior to that, it was the 3DSs and stuff like that. Nintendo has owned this space for 20 years. Even Sony couldn't break into it. Like, they had the PSP, they had the Vita, and those things were so neglected that they failed.
They failed as what they were supposed to be. But for the homebrew people, it was awful.
Oh yeah, yeah. Fine, yeah. Whatever. I don't. That's great, but that's,
Matt, you do have a good point there. Like, yeah, like
it's not a market segment that you can rest on your laurels. Is what I'm saying. Sure. You can't go 6, 7, 8 years. I mean, hopefully it won't be that long. But I'm just saying, this is Valve we're talking about. There has to be a sequel within the next couple of years in order to not only ensure that the AAA games that you're so proud of that actually work on Linux and work on your Steam Deck, new AAA games are going to come out, and eventually they won't play well on this hardware. It's going to happen very soon. Technology just moves that fast. Games move that fast. Ray tracing is a thing, and, you know, despite the people who poo-poo on ray tracing, it is eventually going to be something that people actually want, because NVIDIA wants it.
It currently works only on one game, Doom Eternal.
Yeah. No. Well, ray tracing works on plenty of games. The problem is most people, like especially if we're being completely honest with the majority of gamers, most people have monitors that are not high enough quality where you're really needing it.
Right.
And you do have a good point, Matt. The importance of them upgrading here in the next couple of years is really important. And that them saying another few years does worry me, because I know how Valve works. And if they're not, like, if they're really on something, like, essentially, we don't have to go Freudian with it, but let's go there. Like, if they're, you know, dicks aren't hard about something, they just stop focusing on it. And a good example would be Half-Life 3. Fuck, am I going to get to play Half-Life 3? Come on.
It's never going to happen. They're not even working on it. It is sitting somewhere, you know, they started it. It's now sitting somewhere in a Linux directory structure on an external hard drive buried in the basement of Steam headquarters. And that's where it's going to die forever. It's never going to happen. And this was one of my primary, Tyler, when the Steam Deck was announced, you and I were doing the podcast already together, which is hard to believe. We've been doing a podcast together for 2 years now. And when it was announced, you and I talked about our biggest worries about the Steam Deck. And one of the ones that I said was that if it does come out, my worry about it is that it will be good and that they will then abandon it, because they've done it with every single piece of hardware they've ever come out with. Nope. And it feels like they're doing it again. Like, this thing blew everyone's mind. You have people on like The Verge and Gizmodo talking about this Linux device in such glowing terms, they made me buy one. Okay.
Well, even we have Steam. Steve here is a great example of the Steam Deck, and like Steve was like, "Eh, it's probably not going to be all that good. Like, maybe I'll play just retro games on it." Am I wrong, Steve? When you got it, it was fucking awesome. It blew your mind.
Blew my mind for a week, and now I'm just sitting there.
Well, I think Steve, you and I are similar in that we're old school. We're gonna prefer regular PC gaming over console handheld gaming. I think that's plus yeah. We're not big gamers, right? And we prefer a certain type of very
relaxed.
Neither one of us are gonna go out and play Call of Duty. Okay, we're not Call of Duty. We're not League of Legends, Dota 2, whatever. Right?
Give me a relaxing game. I would play on the Steam Deck.
So the reason why ours is sitting in their cases just collecting dust is more of a personal thing than the Steam Deck being bad. The Steam Deck is fantastic, but it has a half-life that is very short, right? In order for... Because Nintendo's... hold on a second. Let me finish this off. Nintendo has been doing the exact same thing with the Switch. They've been resting on that one Switch that has been a very, very successful for them over the course of the last 5 years, and has been no talk of a sequel. They have come out with an OLED version or whatever, but it's basically the same hardware that it's been for the last 5 years.
That's basically what they said, what Valve said. If we are going to release a new version anytime soon, it's just going to be an iterative update with a screen. A
better screen. Literally what they said, actually. Yeah, better screen. As far as I know, Valve said that they're going to add an OLED.
And top tier, not to the mid and lower tier.
I'm just so look. The Steam Deck, it turns out, was exactly what I thought it would be for me. A waste of money.
Not for me.
What I was gonna say earlier, Matt, was
sorry.
Really in awe. No, you're good. The thing about the Steam Deck that really sets it apart is like if you don't have the problem with all three of us in this call is we all have not necessarily monster, but we have much better desktop systems that we spend most of our time at anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so there's really not like the one thing that this year, it's been kind of a blessing and a curse. Like I've got a lot of vacations this year, which is really nice to be able to get out and go on these vacations. But it's stressful planning for it and everything. But the one thing that I have said that's really fucking incredible about the Steam Deck is if you're somebody who has to travel a lot or you go on vacations pretty frequently with your family, that's where the Steam Deck fucking shines.
And the thing is like it shines right now, Tyler. Like it's gonna be great, and this is the type of hardware. It's gonna be like the PSP. It's gonna be like the Vita, where it's going to live on forever because it runs Linux very well. It does retro gaming really well, so it's gonna be one of those things where people can use it for a very, very long time. But the problem comes in is that it has now garnered a reputation because it has been so successful with having AAA gaming available to it. Obviously, there are exceptions, of course, but for the most part, if you want to play Elden Ring or whatever on it, which plays better on the Steam Deck, apparently, than it does on Windows, or at least it did at the beginning, right? If you can have AAA games that are on there, but that's only going to last so long until the AAA games no longer work on there, and that's going to be...
Perfectly worded, Matt, but the issue, the good thing about the Steam Deck is it's gonna garner a lot, and I'm not talking about a few hundred, I'm talking about hundreds of thousands of retro gamers, because on that thing it supports up to PS3, and Tyler here is going to start downloading a 1 terabyte image for me, which has PS2, PS3, Xbox ROMs on it, that run on the Steam Deck at 60 FPS, not a single drop frame.
I want that too, but Tyler, I'm really sorry about your bandwidth. It's going to be really bad.
I know. The funny thing is now that's been said publicly, I'm going to be getting hit up by so many people, and there's probably going to be like an FBI van sitting outside of my house. Like, is he really down? He really got that many torrents?
You should definitely put that on a torrent site somewhere. I'm just saying. anyways, the whole. You're right, Steve, is that this is going to be a retro gamer's dream machine for a very long time.
But for AAA, as you said, it has a very short shelf life.
Well, right, and that's going to be one of the things that's going to really challenge Valve. Like, I'm not saying, like, I wouldn't say that this is one of those things where, like, when Valve ever says something, I always take it with a grain of salt. Whether they're saying it's going to be few years to, like, 10 years before they do something, or if they're going to do it next week. I always take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah. No, not only that.
For most people don't know this. Well, hold on. Give me one second, Steve. So, most people don't know Steam, like, or Valve as a company, they... As far as I know, they have like about 30 employees.
Yeah, they're very, very small.
Yeah, they're a very small company, especially for how major people think of them.
They have too many projects. Like,
yes. And I think that's going to be one of the most challenging things for Valve, because they have hit a fucking gold mine with this thing.
They need to drop the index completely. That's obviously not going to get updated anytime soon. They need to drop the controller if it's taking up too much thing. They need to focus 100%. I mean... The thing is that they do games too. Like, they have games that they still develop on and stuff like that. So they need to get bigger. I think that they need to get bigger. But the thing that I want to say about this is that the Steam Deck has garnered mainstream support, unlike we thought that it it was always going to be big in the Linux community because it runs Linux. It was always going to be big whether it was a success or not. It was just always going to be that way. What surprised me the most is that I'm constantly seeing articles on mainstream tech blogs, actual CNN, sites like that, talking about how good the Steam Deck is. That positive momentum only lasts as long as the Steam Deck is good. You know what I mean? If the Steam Deck hardware is still good and recommendable in a year from now, sites like CNN and The Verge and Gizmodo or whatever are going to continue to recommend it. But once the hardware starts showing its age, that positive attitude is going to go downhill. Because if it was Microsoft or Nintendo, even though they've shown a resistance to updating the Switch, you know, Sony, whatever. If it was a major corporation that had a long-term history of developing hardware and then releasing sequels to it, Valve would have some, you know, they'd have a cachet of goodwill towards them that, you know, they could take a few years to do the next one. They don't have that. They have a reputation, like Google has a reputation for canceling products. Okay, Valve has a reputation of putting out hardware and then never doing anything with it ever again. Okay,
and it's going
again.
To be...
I've been playing devil's advocate, so I do have to say they haven't hit a gold mine like this before.
I know, and that's why we were all hoping that this was going to be because they hit such a a home run with this thing that they would change their ways. But
they hit a home run, but that's not going to make them change. It's going to get so high into their heads, to a certain degree where, oh, we have this gold mine, why should we work on anything else?
It's not even that, Steve. Would it surprise you, Steve, if I told you right now that they haven't even started working on the next one, that instead they've started a new project?
That wouldn't surprise me at all.
I would bet money that that's exactly what they're doing, because they are so small. As Tyler said, they're a very small team. They can. It really feels like everyone
ADHD,
there.
ADHD style.
Their office manager or whatever, the person who does all of the project management, is very, very anal retentive, right? He has a team that is very focused, but they can only be focused on one thing at a time.
Yeah. Okay, and it's whatever he thinks is fucking sick that year.
And that guy, once the product is done, he never wants to revisit it. and that's what it feels like. It feels like they have this culture there that, you know, they just have everybody working on one project. That project gets done, and then they move on to the next thing. Now, I think that the Steam Deck is going to be a little this is my hope, that the Steam Deck is going to be a little bit different, because they have done a phenomenal job with the software making it better since
it's
release,
not,
right?
It's not about the hardware itself as much as it is the blow they have done to the Linux as a whole, to the Linux world as a whole. Even if they don't continue it, now they have opened so many doors with this little machine that they created, they don't need to. Somebody else will pick up the torch and continue, and other companies are going to...
It would be awesome if that happened, but I don't think it will.
I think one of the more interesting things is because Valve worked with AMD to make the... you're right, Steve. A lot of the amazing work that they've done has been with the software side of things. However, you don't have to, you can't also discredit the fact that they did work with AMD to create a custom chip that does really set it apart from competitors.
And it works well with the software that they have. Yes. It's very integrated.
And I think one of the more interesting things would be, I think probably one of the most likely motivating factors for us getting a newer Steam Deck would be so when it comes to Linux, especially, Valve has completely changed the way Linux people view gaming on Linux, drastically. And I think one of the best ways that they can get funding and at the same time really, really further the Linux space, which is what Valve has oddly tried to do. They've never been public about them trying to improve the Linux space as a goal. No. It's always been a byproduct of what they're doing at the moment.
There's somebody we need to ban in the chat. I'm reading this verbatim. I have a Steam Deck. I eventually installed Windows on it. I'm just saying that guy needs to be banned.
Well, read the last sentence. My laptop came with Windows and now it has Linux on it.
I just thought that, seriously, what the hell is wrong with you, man? I'm kidding. I'm not banning.
I got one too and I did the same thing. I had to try it. I had to see what it was like, and it's shit. It's so bad.
I didn't do that.
So my point would be I think one of the interesting things with Valve, and one of the reasons that we might get a new Steam Deck, and it on Valve's part, if they do this, not just the Linux space, the computing and tech world in general will fucking explode. If they work with NVIDIA to produce an NVIDIA-based mobile handheld.
Yeah.
For one, no one at first, I'm saying
we
this,
won't get Wayland, that's for sure.
But see, here's the thing. Gaming on Linux was fucking shit until Valve started on it. But the thing is NVIDIA loves money. They love money. And if they could work a deal with Valve where it's more profitable for them to work with them for a short period of time to produce a custom chip for a handheld device, I genuinely do believe this will make it to where NVIDIA as a whole has better Linux support, and you will get a device that has better performance.
I thought you were just drunk, not also high. I'm just putting that out there. That's never, ever going to happen. But before we move on, I have to do a mandatory NeoFetch. So on camera, there you go. Red Core Linux right there. Still working very good. But
winning that challenge.
No, I have won the challenge, by the way. Josh has found out. as we all knew. It's a hollow victory because he ended on problems. Although yesterday he did ask if he could switch to a different version of Debian because he was bored. So I figured that the end was near. But anyways, I just go back to the Steam Deck. Tyler, I don't know what the hell it is that you're vaping there, dude, but that's never going to happen.
Look, it's just nicotine, and I know it most likely won't happen, but at the same time, Valve producing a piece of hardware that people who are not in the Linux space enjoyed was extremely low. The odds of Valve working with AMD and producing a custom chip just for them, super low.
Okay, so they're more likely to work with AMD again to do the thing that you're talking about.
Yes. Than they are to work with NVIDIA. I completely agree with that. Yes.
Here's what's more likely and is actually possible. Because SteamOS is open source and based on Linux, other manufacturers could take it and run it on their Steam. Now, it has not happened yet, and that's the reason why I'm very cautious with saying that this is possible, because the problem is that, as Josh is experiencing right now, Linux is very finicky on what hardware it runs on perfectly, right? It has to be very dialed in. You when you're designing a piece of hardware to run Linux, you have to know, does the Wi-Fi card going to work? You know, is the GPU going to be supported by the kernel for any amount of time? You know, how stable is it going to be? All these things, right? Windows will fucking run everywhere. Like, yeah. You could put that thing on a potato. It's going to run like shit, but it will run. And that's the reason why the other gaming consoles that cost way more, like, because they have to pay Windows licenses and stuff, they cost like $1,300 or $1,400. I forget the name. They're like Neo.
Wayne GPD. There's like a whole bunch of
them. Neo. Right? Yeah. All those, they cost way more. They all have Windows on. And there's a reason why they have Windows on them is because Windows will run on those things. They use regular off-the-shelf CPUs.
You know, laptop CPUs.
Yeah, right. And they all have atrocious battery life, and they all whatever, and they've gotten mediocre reviews for years and years. But there's the SteamOS that's just sitting there, and it's possible, in a more perfect world, I should say, that companies take SteamOS and make SteamOS devices. Now, like I said, I don't think.
Those companies do already exist, just so you know. There are already manufacturers that have made their own devices that do run SteamOS out of the box. Or I believe most of them run like a Holo ISO is what they run. But yeah.
But I would love to see
there
a
is
link
one,
to one of those.
There is one.
I've never seen one.
Aya Neo, I think, or another one. I forget which one. That's putting out a premium device for $2,100 that has a dedicated GPU from NVIDIA, custom made for them with a custom AMD CPU. That's hybrid graphics. Linux will be atrocious on them.
Yes. So and that's goodbye. Really my main point with what I was saying with Valve working with NVIDIA is I'm not saying it's very likely, but if it does happen, that's our best chance for getting much better NVIDIA support. Let's be honest, NVIDIA will never fucking do it themselves. They are just pieces of shit.
Everyone got so excited 6 months ago, however long it's been, when NVIDIA open sourced some of its blobs. Right? People freaked the fuck out. Like, oh my god, NVIDIA open sourced the driver. First of all, no, they didn't. No, they didn't. Not even close. They just open sourced the same things that AMD had already open sourced like ages and ages ago.
Decades ago.
Source, right? So everybody was like, well, this is just the first step on the road to having better NVIDIA support on Linux.
Maybe in 150 years.
NVIDIA is notorious. I mean, for hating Linux. It's just notorious. I don't even know if that hate is the right word. They just don't care about Linux. They have no. We should all thank the Linux lords that we have what NVIDIA support we have right now, because it is shocking that it is as good as it is. You know,
it truly is a blessing. There is no way around it.
There's one guy that works in NVIDIA who they've assigned to work on Linux support. There's one dude, you know, he has the smallest office. It has no windows.
He gets picked on every day when he comes into work. They tell him he's got a small dick. They just constantly make fun of him.
They use his office for storage for other things because they forget that there's actually a person that works in there. So there's like boxes sitting behind him and brooms and chemicals and stuff. So that's the guy who does NVIDIA support.
His office is filled with asbestos.
He's also not the greatest developer in the world. He's just, you know, either they hired him.
Let's be honest. He was the one guy in the office that they're like, if we lose him, it's really not that big of a deal.
It was the intern who happens to be the nephew of someone who's not really all that important, you know.
But yeah, it's. But I need to say thanks to Valve for creating the Steam Deck, because I've always, if there's one thing I've never had growing up, was a handheld gaming console. Never had. I've always envied my cousins and my friends having a Game Boy and a Game Gear and a Jaguar. With the Steam Deck, for me, the Steam Deck will live on for years and years and years and years and years. Why? Because the whole point of me getting a Steam Deck was not Steam. It was retro gaming. That's the main goal I got it for. And that's
why for most people it will last so obscenely long.
As long as they don't try to emulate PS4 or PS5 in the future, they're good.
Well, I mean, like really, in all honesty, if we're being honest, like when it comes to the Steam Deck, one of the biggest like longevity factors with it is not even just how it performs right now, but like, let's say you really love it for retro gaming. You don't use it all the time. For the same cost that you bought the device for, you can buy pretty much replacement parts for everything other than the complete main board itself.
Yeah.
For the same cost as the device. And you could shove it back and only take it out when you want to play retro games. And then when the battery dies, you can slap a new battery in it. You can do all of that stuff.
The openness aspect of it. And plus, you know how the PS Vita and the PSP, they had to be hacked to be able to run homebrew and do all this, and they have all these hacking community around them. With the Steam Deck, it's already open. You don't need to do anything to do a hard job. It's right there. You can install.
Just in case anyone doesn't know this, if you want like one of the coolest things, I don't know if anyone had a PSP back in the days, but there used to be a homebrew version of Nazi Zombies that you could get for the PSP and play on it. I actually tested it. That homebrew version for the PSP of Nazi Zombies, you can run on the Steam Deck, and it runs so much better than it did on my old PSP back in the day. Like, it's wild. The thing about like the Steam Deck is I genuinely do think that we're going to see a lot of
modding and customization and
ironically, I don't think there's going to be nearly as many people pushing for a new version as we would like to see. Exactly. Cuz a new version is going to be important.
The person who's pushing for it the most probably is going to be me who doesn't actually use the original all that much, right? Because the Steam Deck is so important to keep in the limelight. It has to keep a positive reputation.
In the retro world.
Right. Yeah. But that's basically talking about 10 people, Steve. Like I know that's a lot more than that. But when you're comparing it to the people who it's important to now, the mainstream gamers, you know, the retro gamers are such a small portion of that, right? You say that,
but those are the people who are going to keep it alive for the longest and keep talking about it's not in the media.
Yeah, but
to buy the thing, right? It's not going to bring in new people to. Steam is a company that has to make money, and like all companies, and in order to do that, they're going to have a new product eventually. Now, the problem with Steam is, or with Valve, they have a tendency to as we talked about, end a project and move on to another one, to go to the next project. And, you know, that was fine when they continued to have flops. The Steam machines, no one cared that there weren't version 2s of the Steam machines. They were bad.
No one cared.
Like, there was no games. Even the Steam controller, which has a cult following, like a retro gaming following, if you will, right? I mean, it's not the same, you know, people, but, you know, there's a very small community that's very passionate about the Steam controller. Vast majority of people don't give a rat's ass about the Steam controller because it wasn't good, right? It just wasn't good, you know?
I loved it, but I can see objectively how some people would say it wasn't good.
It's weird.
Yes.
And that's the reason why it wasn't a success.
They're used to Valve the Xbox controller.
Valve has had its first hardware success, and it's been astonishing because it runs Linux. When you have a success like that, you cannot say, in a few years we'll get around to making a second version. Yeah, I was not expecting them to say, hey, we'll have a new version in 2024. No company's ever going to say that because it will immediately kill anybody from buying it right now. So a few years would make sense to me. It'd be fine for me if they said this and then they had a history of following through, You know,
basically it's what they made us expect of them. That's going to cause them more harm than good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. Yeah. We switched to, I knew, as usual, I always save the one that I know for sure we're going to talk about the longest as the last one. Cause it's, I hate me. When Tyler first got his Steam Deck, all we talked about was the Steam Deck. It was constantly like
seriously. Now we're three.
I'm pretty sure you used it as your thingy of the week for like 4 weeks in a row.
Yeah, it was. I really annoyed you. I knew I was annoying you.
It was bad, and I don't want to make every podcast about the Steam Deck, but they've done such a number on Linux gaming. Like not only
Linux gaming, you're getting a gaming device and a laptop at the same time.
Yeah, I'm not sold on the whole desktop mode thing that people are actually using it. Normal people, I don't think even like, I still don't even know how to get to it. So, and I've had the damn thing for a month. Never tried.
Have you never turned it off in the settings?
Nope. No, I've
okay.
Never,
you hit the Steam button, you go down to power, and then there's show desk or go to desktop. Because you're technically, it's two different environments. So
I don't want to hook this thing. It's a mobile thing, and if you're trying to tell me that I should go use KDE on a 7-inch screen, you're out of your bleeding mind.
Look, this is the same thing we argued with Steve about before
exactly.
He got it.
Exactly! Matt is turning to me!
just plug it into a monitor. Like, trust me.
No. I have a computer here. I have a computer behind me, even if it's not working right now. I don't need a portable computer like that. I have
that's
a
what I said. For this purpose. That's what I said. But as soon as I hooked it up to a monitor, I turned it into Zero Linux and I enjoyed it.
I have negative interest in ever doing that. Okay, so one final thought on, and I've talked about this. The biggest problem I have with the Steam Deck, and one of the reasons why I don't turn it on all that often, is because when you go into the games that are meant for bigger screens, the text is so small. It is like I have bad eyesight. Like, I'm an old man. I have bad eyesight. I wear glasses, okay? And for those of you who can't see me, I'm putting the glasses back on because I went blind there for a second. And it's not, guys, I can see stuff, but I can't read anything without the glasses.
Just so everyone in chat doesn't say anything to Matt, all right, look, I am under 25 years old, and I wear contacts, and if I take these bad boys out, like, I can't read fucking text on my 4K monitor with the text enlarged. I'm blind as shit. So it's not just about age. For anyone who's going to defend about age, no, it's just bad eyesight.
I'm just saying that my biggest problem with the Steam Deck is that text is so small. Now, supposedly there's a key binding that you can use to zoom in on just the text. Supposedly that does exist. Somebody told me what it was. I immediately forgot what that key binding was. I just have no interest in looking it up. Maybe eventually I will, but the game, like, there's some. In fact, I'd say the vast majority of games weren't just designed for the Steam Deck, and they have no interface to say, hey, make the text bigger. You know what I mean? Yeah. If anything, it's increase the resolution and make the text smaller. You know, because
it behaves like it's running on a laptop. This is how it behaves.
Yes, it does.
It doesn't know it's on a Steam Deck. It just behaves on a laptop. So the resolution is this big. Okay, this is the scaling that comes by default for this resolution. So
just as a question, both of you guys have Dead Cells, right? I actually don't have Dead Cells.
I have Dead Cells. It's a good game.
Okay.
I'm bad at it.
So have you tried playing it on the Steam Deck on a separate 1080p monitor?
No.
What do you mean?
I've seen someone do it.
What do you mean?
Like dock it and then play Dead Cells from the Steam Deck on
a 1080p monitor. I did.
Yeah, it runs fine, doesn't it?
Yeah. And the character, everything is big and everything is good.
Why would I do that? I have a computer.
No. And that was going to be my next point, Matt. Like, what you're saying is completely valid. Because for most people like us who are, like, already nerdy and doing stuff on our main desktop, there's not that particular use case. But the Steam Deck is $400, and there is a ton of people out there who would like to get a laptop.
Plus, and it's just, you made an excellent point earlier about how good this thing is on vacations and taking it, you know, playing a game while you're on your way to work. Although I don't think that that's as big of a a use case as most people would like it to be, simply because that thing's going to be downloading on mobile data like crazy.
Because it's constantly downloading stuff.
Not if you don't connect it. And,
your retro games, those Steve, don't require the internet connection. A lot of AAA games require you to have it connected to the internet in order to
work. Especially if you're like Matt and you download Apex Legends, that bad boy. Trust me when I say, Matt, I'm just going to do you a huge solid here. Please do not play Apex Legends on the Steam Deck, because if you do a squad, and which most people, that's how they play Apex, is like with a squad.
I know zero things about Apex. I've never played it, so it was just free to play. So I was like, hey, I'll download this thing.
It is a really good game, but on the Steam Deck, for one, Apex Legends is not. It's a really fast paced first person shooter.
Your thumbs are gonna go dead.
Well, not just that, but like playing on a controller when you're versing PC players, like, dude, the Apex scene, like, people are super competitive. The first time I played, I told my team that I was playing on the Steam Deck. I had just gotten it and I was testing it out, and all of them told me to go die and rot in hell because they knew they were going to lose because of me. We did lose, but
they'd probably lose if I was using it. The thing. Tyler, you and I have talked about this before we went to four people. When I was still waffling over whether or not to buy it, one of the reasons why I didn't buy it is because the nature of the gaming that I do doesn't do well on the Steam Deck.
Understandable.
My biggest game that I play, the one that I've in my Steam library that I've played the most, the one that has the most hours logged, is Cities Skylines. You want me to play that on the Steam Deck? I mean, you can do it. I've downloaded it. It works. Okay, but it literally fries the CPU, and that's like with no population whatsoever. That thing runs 300,000 degrees when you're trying to run it, and it's just a small screen. You can't do a city builder very well, at least not that type of city builder. I mean, maybe a mobile city builder, but not a full fledged.
Not every game was made with a Steam Deck in mind. Right, even if they run on the Steam Deck, but the UI and the scale.
Well, I mean, I play DayZ. I play DayZ, and it is fucking not made for a Steam Deck at all.
I understand that. Like, I'm not trying to shoehorn it in, but that's one of the reasons why the Steam Deck hasn't been as useful for me as I'd hoped it would be.
It's for the niche gamer. And
my style of gaming's not first person shooter. I think it'd be fantastic for first person shooter. It's great for side scrollers. It's great for
best
runners.
For a side scroller.
It's probably great for clickers, you know, as Hex DSL calls them, clickers, things that you just click.
Vampire Survivors is fucking lit on the Steam Deck.
It has games that it's really, really good for, but none of those games are games that I'm particularly interested in.
I totally understand that.
Here's what the Steam Deck did to the gaming community. You know those indie people with indie titles and indie small...
Yes, I know where you're going with this. I love it.
It has shone a light on those people's products so big and so wide.
Yes.
They used to make next to zero selling their games before the Steam Deck. But when the Steam Deck came around and those games being so awesome on the Steam Deck, their sales went off the roof.
You literally brought up a point that I don't think me and Matt or any of us have ever discussed on the podcast ever. But that's one of the things the Steam Deck has done. Like, the Steam Deck has increased indie revenue streams fucking tons. Like,
you know what Valve needs to do? Is they need to do a better job of getting to verifying the free-to-play games. Because they've completely ignored that whole category.
Because it doesn't bring them
right,
any money.
I understand why, but as someone who, guys, I have spent a crazy amount of money on Steam games that I've never played. I do that every time Valve has a sale.
I'm right there with you, brother. I got almost 300 fucking games. Right, I probably play 40% of them. Maybe.
In one day, I spend $600.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong, I do spend money on Steam, but the thing is, but most of the games that I want to play, you know, that look interesting to me, I spend my, every time I get on the Steam Deck, and I'm looking for a new game to play, I go to the free-to-play games because I don't want to have to spend $600 in a day. I don't want to buy.
We discussed it. Me and Tyler about having demo games on on the Steam Deck before. You need to test before you buy, especially now on the Steam Deck. But with demos non-existing, what the hell?
Wait, so you can't use the Steam demo mode on the Steam Deck?
No, you can, but the thing is there's a lot of games that don't have demos.
They don't have, right, okay, yeah. That makes sense. But my point was is that they have this whole free-to-play section, and they've done a crap job of doing the verification for Steam on Steam Deck on it. My first thing is the text that I can't read. That's the biggest problem. I challenge anybody to, okay, everything goes back to pizza for me, but you guys get a frozen pizza and you want to read the instructions on the back, and I don't know if you guys know this, but they've made the instructions so small, and usually they've chosen colors that don't really go well together, so I find myself having to pull my phone out, take a picture of it, and zoom in, you know?
The amount of times I've had to read the cooking instructions that's, painted in white, or not white, a yellow text for my mom.
And it's not, regular yellow, it's, pastel yellow on a dark yellow background or something like that. It's not legible whatsoever, and it's not just obviously but my point was is that that's kind of the Steam Deck for me, is it has this really small text, and I challenge anyone even with perfect eyesight to go read it, you know.
I agree 100%.
It can't be challenging.
It's challenging on a lot of games, especially the games for example, you cannot put God of War in this category because God of War has text this big on a big monitor already.
Yes.
There are mostly games Counter-Strike, for example, and I don't know who plays Counter-Strike.
Oh, that is, yes.
If
that
you
is
look
good
at the
point.
Text, it's barely readable on the Steam Deck. You put it on the desktop, finally, you can read.
Okay, so the worst one that I've seen is a free-to-play game called, I think it's called Drift. It's a racing game. It's a rally racing game.
Yeah, I have it.
Their menu system in that is really light gray text on a white background.
Yes.
You cannot read that whatsoever.
Because of this, believe it or not, I never played the game. I just launched it, saw the menu. It was really confusing and really... This light gray on a white
transparent
background.
White background.
I'm not gonna bother with this game.
And that's not even a Steam Deck. That's just whoever designed this game is a fucking moron. Those colors don't go together. I raced one time and then I haven't launched it since. I need to uninstall. It's just taking up memory at this point, and constantly updating itself, probably taking all the bandwidth. Anyways, guys.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. We were gonna end the podcast. I totally forgot about that. That's something that was gonna happen.
We're pushing 2 hours, by the way.
Okay. Never mention the Steam Deck again.
We'll spend an hour on it.
It was a good conversation. Okay, so we really need to get on to and I apologize if the video just went away because I switched to the wrong workspace, so I apologize for that. I think I got it fixed. Moving on to the thingies of the week, we could have called this section anything, but we've decided thingies of the week, which is probably the best thing because it's not trademark like apps of the week or the picks of the week or the trips of the week, whatever. Thingies of the week, get your mind out of the gutter. That's not why we called it that. Just saying that. Anyway, so Tyler, your thingy of the week. We basically know what this is.
Alright, boys, so let's get into the real shit, alright? Project Zomboid. If you don't own it, add it to your fucking wish list on Steam, okay? It's fucking sick. If you like survival games, if you like zombie games, if you like a game where you can go base build, if you like a game where you can put on makeup and also dress in a very odd way, then it's literally has everything. It's fucking sick. There's thousands of mods out there for it. If you want to mod it to shit, you can. If you've got a certain type, if you wanted to find out how you would survive, 6 months into a zombie apocalypse, you wake up having like The Walking Dead style, shit, you've been in a hospital with a coma for forever. Whatever type of play style or scenario you want to play out, you could do it in Project Zomboid. It's lit. It's $20 on Steam. I highly recommend, if you don't want to spend $20 on it, you want to save some cash or whatever, wait till the Steam summer sale, because it's almost always on sale throughout the summer sale, which should be coming up here in like a month or a few months. I can't remember exactly when the Steam summer sale starts, but wait for it. Get it then. You'll get a heavy discount.
You forgot to mention that it's an isometric top-down view game.
Yes, it is isometric top-down, which is one of the reasons why I never bought it.
You mean top-down view like the original GTA games?
Not really. Yes. Not really. The GTA game was more 2D than 3D.
Yeah, like floating down, top-down.
Yeah. No.
This is more like if you take the camera and turn it at an angle.
Perspective view.
Weird.
It really does. If you go to the Steam like page for Project Zomboid, one of the reasons that I never really actually played it was just because of the isometric view and the art style of it. I didn't think it would really be all that.
Never
fun.
Judge a book by its cover.
Yes, I could not tell you how wrong I was. It is an insanely fun game. The graphics, like you would think they would cause issues or whatever. No, it makes it way more enjoyable. Like I don't know how to explain
it. And it doesn't suck as much battery as other games do.
Yes,
on the Steam
if you want to play on. Also, here's another thing: if you want to play on the Steam Deck, it does work on the Steam Deck. It is verified for the Steam Deck. Although I will say, for me, I had to go in and enable like the Steam Virtual Controller in the settings to get everything to work properly. But like, I don't really think that's that big of a deal. It's really, in all honesty, it's a really fun game. I would recommend you wait till you get it on sale. Also, if you're broke as shit and you really want to play it, but you, like, you know, like, even in months, you're not going to have, like, $5 to $10 to put towards the game, that's totally fine. When the Steam summer sale hits, I plan on buying, like, 8 to 12 copies of the game, okay? They've got a 4-pack that's normally $60. I'm hoping that shit'll be juicy on sale during the Steam summer sale. I'll pick up multiple versions of that. Just message me and like let me know on Discord or whatever that you cannot
he's
afford
Santa
it
Claus.
And you'd like
he's,
to get
he,
it.
He's Santa Claus. Summer,
Project Zomboid for everybody, guys. It's on me.
Yes. There's already been a few people in my Discord that have gotten it. I have not played multiplayer yet. I'm really excited to check that out.
And for everyone who's watching or listening, he got me on board. He's so convincing. All and right. Here's what another
I'm,
thing.
I'm
here's
really
another
glad
thing. He's the I, one who got me on board the Steam Deck. Who got me to get the Steam Deck.
You guys are bros. It's great. I really, guys, desperately, we need to get this podcast done. Steve, your thingy of the week, please. I need to get out of this chair. I got.
He's like, I've got a piss, boys.
Pee,
let's go.
okay, mine is very short. It's shortwave radio. It's a GTK app. It's an awesome little thing that you can run in the background without ads. Well, of course, the radio station ads, of course, because you're listening to radio stations. But for me, it was a way to listen to my favorite radio station locally. I was surprised, and I swear to God, not a single radio station application I used before had Lebanon in its repertoire. This one does, and it has a radio station called Nostalgie. It's a nostalgic as it sounds. It's all oldies but French oldies. And I've grown
I
up
really
with
hope there's like a French version of Robin Williams doing Hello Lebanon or there's something.
it's a really awesome thing because I love this radio station. I don't care about the ads. The ads are very short. They don't have long ads. They cannot afford long ads. But it's awesome to listen to my favorite music because getting them on Spotify, I can't find half the songs they play on this radio station on Spotify. So this is a cool app to check out. It's a GTK app, very small to install. It's available on as a flatback or from the AUR for Arch people. I recommend the flatback, of course. Not the Snap, please, God forbid. It's very slow to launch and it disconnects a lot. This snap version, so grab it from the Flat Hub. Simple app.
Sounds cool. Probably also on the Gen 2 repos. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Matt's gonna be the quickest. Matt, they're like, this is gonna take like 2 seconds. Matt's gonna be like, is this name? Like, fuck it, let's move on, boys. I gotta piss. Let's go.
Term down is mine. Basically, it's a clock that runs in the terminal. It's not a clock that runs in the terminal. It's a timer or a stopwatch or something that runs in the terminal, you can start it. It will go up or down. So if you are, so I've been using it now for speed runs for racing and stuff. And you just put it on there, and it counts up, and it'll count things. And you don't have to create a script to do any of that stuff for what, and it looks.
Were nice. You watching a Chris Titus Tech video recently?
No, I've been using TermDown for years.
Did he recently do a video on it?
Chris Titus Tech steals stuff.
Uses it. Uses it every time Chris on his live.
I guarantee that Chris Titus Tech doesn't know who I am. I'm just putting that out there. So don't at me like, oh, he's not actually stealing stuff from me. Trust me, I know he's not actually stealing stuff from me. He has no clue that my channel exists. It's fine. Although I did see that Brody had him on his podcast. So I was like, damn, Brody's really making it. He's, like, he's gone from the Linux cast to Chris Titus Tech. He's really gone far. Anyways, that is it for this podcast. God, if you watched this whole podcast in the live chat or even afterwards and you made it to the 2-hour and 1-minute mark, God bless your little soul.
Also, before we go, real quick, I will just do a public service announcement. Just so you guys know, if you're on Discord and you want to talk, me and my mom are going to go, right after this podcast, I'm going to go down some drinks. We got a bottle of moonshine that me and my mom got to finish off for reasons. So after that, I'm going to be in Discord and I might do a live stream on YouTube. So, but if you do have Discord and you want to come over, hang out on my server, it's probably going to be a real fun time.
Just to let y'all know, post Moonshine Tyler is the best version of Tyler. I'm just going to put this up there. Okay. Anyways, if you want to support me on Patreon, you can do so. Patreon.com/LinuxCast. Thanks to everybody who does support me on Patreon. You guys are all absolutely amazing. If you support me on YouTube, you guys are amazing too, obviously. Everybody who supports me, you're fantastic. I love you guys all so damn much. Thank you for your support. I truly do appreciate it. You guys can catch the Linux Cast. We record this live every Saturday. Usually every Saturday at 3:00 p.m. Eastern time. We usually end it before 5:00, but today, Jesus Christ, we did not even come close. I've got to pee. So thank you guys for watching. We'll see you next week.
Peace out.